Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping straight into a really fascinating legal showdown right here in Florida. We're looking at the complexities of executive power and the accountability of elected officials.
Right.
We're dissecting the suspension of Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel by Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, this all unfolded after those tragic events, the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting in 2017, and of course, the devastating Marjorie Stoneman Douglas high school shooting in Parkland in February 2018.
Terrible events, and they absolutely led to intense scrutiny, as you'd expect.
Exactly. And that scrutiny is where our deep dive begins, examining the, you know, the legal battle that followed the governor's decision.
Precisely. And this isn't just about one sheriff, really. What we're digging into is this core question. Did Governor DeSantis overstep his constitutional authority when he suspended Sheriff Israel?
Yeah.
We're going to unpack the crucial legal arguments, how the Florida courts responded. And for you, especially if you're keen on grasping the nuances of our legal system, the power dynamics, this case is, well, it's a really compelling example.
Okay, so let's start by laying out the situation. Scott Israel was elected Broward County Sheriff back in 2016. Then, as we all unfortunately remember, came those horrific shootings.
Mm-hmm.
The aftermath, especially after Parkland, brought just significant criticism of Sheriff Israel and the Broward Sheriff's Office. The big questions were about preparedness, response capabilities.
And that scrutiny led directly to action from the governor's office. So in January 2019, Governor DeSantis issues Executive Order 1914. That's the official instrument suspending Sheriff Israel.
And the reasons cited were serious.
Oh, absolutely. Legally significant, neglect of duty, and incompetence. These aren't just, you know, casual accusations. They are specific grounds for suspension under Florida law.
Right. And the executive order didn't just state the grounds. It included specific allegations. Things like failure to establish appropriate active shooter policies, inadequate deputy training for these kinds of incidents.
And also that he'd failed his statutory duty as the conservator of the peace.
That phrase, conservator of the peace, it sounds kind of old-fashioned, but it carries real legal weight, doesn't it? About a sheriff's basic responsibilities.
It does indeed. It's a traditional term, essentially meaning the sheriff is responsible for maintaining law and order in the county. It's a broad mandate, enforcing laws, preventing breaches of the peace, all of that.
Okay.
And importantly, Sheriff Israel didn't just accept this. He fought back. He challenged the governor's action, arguing DeSantis had exceeded his constitutional authority. And that, right there, set the stage for the legal battle.
So let's move into the courtroom then. What was the procedural journey? How did this move through the legal system?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly simple. Israel first filed a petition for a writ of quo warranto in the circuit court. Now, as law students likely know, quo warranto is basically challenging someone's right to hold public office.
Right, challenging DeSantis' authority to remove him.
Exactly. But the circuit court dismissed his petition, so he appealed, and the case eventually went all the way to the Florida Supreme Court, which ultimately upheld the dismissal.
And it's crucial to remember, while the courts were looking at this, the Florida Senate had its own constitutional role waiting in the wings.
Precisely. Under the Florida Constitution, the governor can suspend, yes, but only the Senate has the authority to actually remove or reinstate the official.
Right.
The governor has to send the suspension order and evidence to the Senate president.
And then the Senate does its own thing.
Its own investigation, its own hearing. And they need a two-thirds vote for removal. If they don't act by the end of the next regular session, the officer gets automatically reinstated. So the Senate process was basically paused, waiting for the courts.
Okay, so drilling down into the legal arguments themselves, what were the key questions the courts were actually trying to answer here?
Well, there were two main issues. First, did Governor DeSantis even have the constitutional authority to suspend Sheriff Israel under Article 4, Section 7A? You know, that part of the Constitution grants the governor power to suspend for specific reasons like neglect of duty, incompetence.
Malfeasance, misfeasance.
A few others. Right. And second, the courts had to decide if the specific allegations in that executive order, 1914, were legally sufficient to justify a suspension on those grounds, neglect of duty and incompetence.
And critically, the courts weren't trying to figure out if Sheriff Israel was actually negligent or incompetent, right? Their focus was narrower.
That's a vital distinction. The courts were focused on whether Governor DeSantis had presented a plausible basis for the suspension. Their job wasn't to hold a trial on Israel's competence.
So more like looking at the paperwork.
Kind of. They were examining the executive order itself. Did the allegations within it have a reasonable connection to the charges of neglect of duty and incompetence? So what this means is the initial hurdle for a governor is, well, relatively low. The courts aren't verifying the claims at that stage, just checking if they could potentially fit the definition.
Which puts a lot of weight on the Senate later on.
A significant amount, yes.
Okay, let's break down that part of the Constitution, Article 4, Section 7. What are the key pieces?
Okay, so Section 7A is the power source for the governor. It lists the grounds: malfeasance, misfeasance, neglect of duty, drunkenness, incompetence, permanent inability, or committing a felony.
Pretty broad list.
It is. Then Section 7B outlines the Senate's crucial role. It explicitly states the Senate has the sole power to remove or reinstate. Governor sends the info, Senate investigates, holds hearings, needs that two-thirds vote for removal, and that deadline, if they don't act, reinstatement is automatic.
So governor initiates, Senate decides. Got it. Now, you mentioned the reasonable relation test the Florida Supreme Court used. Can you unpack that a bit more? What does that mean in practice?
Yeah, the standard of review is fascinating here. The reasonable relation test means the court's job was limited to a facial review of the executive order. They weren't digging into the facts or the strength of the evidence.
Just reading the order itself.
Essentially, yes. They were asking, do the allegations as written have a reasonable connection to the charges of neglect of duty and incompetence? Could someone plausibly read these allegations and think, yeah, these actions might count as neglect or incompetence?
So, like you said, a low bar.
Yeah.
Almost like ruling on a motion to dismiss. Taking the allegations as true for the sake of argument.
That's a good analogy. Exactly. At that preliminary stage, they assume the allegations could be proven. The truth comes later, potentially, in the Senate.
That makes sense. And the court really emphasized the Senate's role, didn't they? Why was that so central to their reasoning?
They were incredibly clear about that. The Senate is the constitutionally designated body to weigh the evidence, determine the facts, and make the final call on removal or reinstatement. The judiciary's role is just to ensure the governor had a legitimate constitutional starting point.
So the court is saying it's not our job to second-guess the governor or the Senate on the merits.
Precisely. They explicitly stated they wouldn't substitute their judgment for the governor's initial assessment, or, crucially, for the Senate's final determination.
And how did the court actually define neglect of duty and incompetence for this case? Those terms seem key.
They are. The court defined neglect of duty as failing to perform a legal obligation. And they noted this could stem from willfulness, malice, ignorance, or even just oversight. So pretty broad.
Okay.
Incompetence was defined as lacking the physical, moral, or intellectual capability to do the job. This could come from gross ignorance or carelessness. These definitions were the legal yardstick the court used to measure whether the governor's allegations reasonably related to these grounds.
Now, the decision wasn't unanimous. There were concurring opinions, justices who agreed with the outcome, but wanted to add their own points. Let's talk about those. Justice Muniz, for instance.
You're right. Justice Muniz wrote separately, concurring, but he directly tackled Sheriff Israel's argument that the allegations weren't really connected to his official duties. Muniz strongly disagreed. He emphasized that whole conservator of the peace role. He argued it's a fundamental duty that absolutely includes developing policies, ensuring proper training, effective supervision. So, in his view, the governor's allegations about policy and training failures went straight to the heart of the sheriff's job.
So Muniz was saying being sheriff isn't just reacting, it's also about proactively setting things up correctly for public safety.
Exactly. His concurrence gave a broader view of a sheriff's duties, which naturally strengthened the idea that the alleged failures could fit the definition of neglect or incompetence.
Interesting. And what about Justice LaBarga's concurrence? What points did he raise?
Justice LaBarga also agreed with the outcome, but sounded a note of caution. While he thought the executive order in this specific case had enough detail, he really stressed that the bar shouldn't be too low for these orders. Meaning, for the Senate to do its job properly, and importantly, to respect the voters who elected the official, these suspension orders need specific factual allegations, not just vague conclusory statements. He warned that orders lacking that specific detail would, in his opinion, be constitutionally insufficient.
So he's worried about due process, making sure the Senate has something concrete to review.
Exactly. He's highlighting the need for transparency and real accountability. You can't just make vague claims. You need to lay out what the official allegedly did or failed to do specifically so the Senate can actually investigate and make an informed decision. It protects the process and respects the electorate.
That's a really crucial point from LaBarga. Even with the reasonable relation test for the initial suspension, the governor still needs to provide enough substance for meaningful scrutiny later.
Precisely. It's about ensuring the Senate's review isn't just a formality, but a genuine check on the governor's power.
Okay, so let's bring it all together. What are the main takeaways from this whole legal saga, especially for someone studying law?
Well, the biggest one is just seeing the separation of powers in action, textbook style almost. You have the governor initiating, the courts doing a limited legal check, and the Senate holding the ultimate power to decide the official's fate.
Checks and balances.
Exactly. And it really highlights the ongoing tension, you know, between executive oversight, the governor's need to ensure officials are doing their jobs, and the accountability of people elected by the voters.
And for law students specifically, why is this case valuable?
Oh, it hits several key areas. It's obviously a constitutional law interpreting powers, limits. It's also administrative law, the rules for executive actions. But fundamentally, it's about that delicate balance of powers.
And the court's role in it all?
Yes. The judiciary's role in reviewing executive actions while still respecting the other branches. That reasonable relation test itself is a key concept in judicial review, and this case gives a really concrete example of how it works. Plus, those concurring opinions add layers about interpretation and procedural fairness.
So just to recap, the Florida Supreme Court said Governor DeSantis could suspend Sheriff Israel based on the allegations presented. It wasn't a ruling on whether Israel was incompetent, but that the allegations reasonably related to those charges.
Correct. It passed the initial legal threshold.
And the court kept pointing to the Senate as the ultimate decider.
Exactly. The judicial review was about the legality of the suspension order itself. The deeper dive into the facts, the performance evaluation, that responsibility lay squarely with the Senate and its process.
Okay, so here's a final thought for everyone listening to mull over. Given that the courts play a pretty limited role at the start, and suspending an elected official is a huge deal for them and their community, what factors should the Senate really focus on when they conduct their review? What's most important? And maybe bigger picture, what does this case tell us about how we think about accountability for public safety leaders today? Definitely something to chew on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.